Welcome to the Laser Blast Star Wars Puncast, a bi-weekly podcast where I try to convince my friends that Star Wars cartoons are as refreshing as the water given to you by a small child in a bucket hat after you've annihilated 1,000 battle droids. I'm Peter Kaplowski, and joining me, as always, are...
Justin DeGlue.
And Matthew Kumar. I want to say, first off, before Justin jumps in with some sort of joke about something or other, this episode was, in fact, a tall glass of water. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh, Peter, you convinced me watching this that Star Wars cartoons are good.
Yeah, I'm convinced too, actually. I mean, there's much more of this, right? Like...
At least one other volume. Yes, one other volume.
I was just laughing because Peter, it sounded like he paused for like the audience to laugh before he went, my name's Peter Kaplowski.
No, it was more I was waiting for you, Justin. And then I also began to laugh when I could tell that you were definitely on the precipice of saying something.
Yes. I have been banned from dunking on Peter right from the get-go before I get to say my name.
But what did we watch this week, Peter?
Well, instead of continuing our watch of Star Wars The Clone Wars, is I think the official title, we instead went back in time and watched another animated Clone Wars series called Star Wars : Clone Wars.
Or as Disney Plus lists it, Star Wars Vintage 2D Clone Wars Bugaboo?
Micro shorts, I think.
Yeah.
This is not your daddy's The Clone Wars. This is your grandpa's The Clone Wars.
Yeah, it is our grandpa's The Clone Wars. Grandpa's this fought was, wars.
This was an animated series that was commissioned by George Lucas to go into production and to be released between the events and between the production of Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. It was meant to bridge the two films and show the Clone Wars that... we don't get to see that much of in the movies themselves, and they were animated and directed by the incredible Jendy Tartakovsky.
And then George Lucas got very annoyed because he was like, you've made all these characters I've created look cool and have them do cool things when they're supposed to be sitting in rooms talking about trade federations or something.
And so he literally banished them from existence.
Yeah, they were decanonized with the inaugurate with the release of the Clone Wars, the new series that we've been watching. Though elements of them have slipped into canon at the discretion of the...
It contradicts anything that we see in the Clone Wars show, though.
I would say the biggest contradiction is that. The Jedi are really good at using the Force.
Yes.
It does not take a lot of concentration for them to lift up a knife. Instead, they can literally flick their wrists, and all the bolts in a battle droid can pull out of the body.
You're jumping ahead, because that part is awesome. But I have to say, so George Lucas hired Jendy Tartakovsky. Jendy Tartakovsky made exactly what he's great at, and George Lucas went, no thank you, and tossed it aside.
I mean, I'm not sure it was as like callous or as cruel as that. I think ultimately he decided he wanted to do a longer series about the Clone Wars, and rather than burden the writers with adhering to...
That's fine. They put the DVDs out of print, though.
Yeah, it's true. They didn't renew the DVDs, and I do wonder too if it was kind of like as you alluded to, like. Yeah, they make everyone look so much cooler and capable, and it kind of contradicts the movies and the subsequent series because these abilities are so overpowered compared to anything else.
How would that be anyone's complaint though? To be like, oh, I don't want to see this good thing because this other shit is lame. Let's keep giving the lame stuff.
It's really weird because like if actually watching it, I was expecting a bunch of stuff that would feel out of canon based on what we've seen, but like apart from a scene that. You know, where a character apparently dies, but he didn't definitely die. There's not a lot that really couldn't be left in canon, let's be honest. Like,
it's just battles that are happening.
Yeah, it's just fights that are happening. Yeah. Nothing, like, massive happens where, like, anything would be like, oh, well, we have to deal with that, like, storyline-wise, because remember when they did that fight and that thing happened? Like, it's like, it wouldn't burden anyone with anything. Like, it seems unnecessary for it to have been removed from the canon.
Well, it's back
now. Yeah, I mean, I well, it's not back now, I don't think.
Oh. No, it's still Legends. It's still in the Legends.
Still Legends? Okay.
Yeah, because Star Wars Vintage, anything on Star Wars Vintage, it's not going to...
But as we talked, I think last episode, canon doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's kind of just like there's tiers of it. You know, the movies are essentially supposed to be anything that's... I mean, even the new Star Wars TV show that just came out, The Bad Batch, the fans got kind of annoyed because it shows scenes from Order 66, specifically a sequence that happens in a popular Star Wars comic that is supposed to be canon, but it was contradicting details of it.
Who cares, like, man? It's like...
And it was literally details that were weird, like... The lightsaber color was different, but this was like really traumatizing fans because some of the fans are like, no, you don't understand, Disney. Once you said that everything since 2014 is canon, I have been watching and reading everything with the understanding that it is canon, and you changed the lightsaber on me.
Listen, yes, Max Rebo hit the same key twice, but it played two different notes. It's all garbage.
I'll field this one. Let me ask you a question. Why would a man whose shirt says genius at work spend all of his time watching a children's cartoon show?
I withdraw my question.
Yeah, and so Star Wars can just release another movie where they just rewrite canon, and they're like, listen, if you look at that lightsaber from a particular angle, it changes color. See? There you go. Plot hole fixed.
You don't understand. That story was being told by a colorblind character. He yeah, doesn't exactly. see any colors.
Yeah, that's not the true story. We were just hearing the story from the perspective of someone else. There you go.
I mean, you know, and it wouldn't be Star Wars without from a certain point of view. So,
you know that nerd who spotted that mistake. Like, he got like chubby, and he had it for a week, like posting on the Twitter forums. The lightsaber's the wrong color.
I mean, there were more grievous discongruities.
There were some General Grievouses out there.
Yeah.
Well, General Grievous is so cool, right, guys? I mean, like, he's awesome in this.
Wait. You're going to jump ahead because I want to throw back to a young Justin seeing Revenge of the Sith after seeing this cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it comes down to the fact that, like, George was like, wait a minute, Grievous is entirely too cool. We have to throw it all out. I want Grievous to be the lamest possible villain.
So
he's so stealthy in this. He should have a disgusting wet cough. He can't be stealthy.
And what's weird about that is, like, George likes this kind of stuff. When they were remastering A New Hope, he was, like, showing his crew, like, a Chinese ghost story and said he wanted action like this. And Peter probably knows the story, that he wanted to add in, like, CGI backflipping Darth Vaders and Obi-Wans in the first movie.
Yeah, he did want to do stuff like that, which the fans have gone ahead and done themselves. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's this, like, fan version of the A New Hope Darth Vader Obi-Wan fight that's been on the internet for a few years. And everyone says it's, like, the coolest thing ever, and I'm like, no, it looks so lame. It's like a CGI Obi-Wan and Vader just having, like, an intense, crazy duel that's so out of place, but now fans are, like, editing it into their copies of A New Hope.
Well, you know, yeah, sounds great. Just like the cartoon that we watched. So how does it open, Peter?
Well, it opens with a figure in the distance running across a large plain. That little figure is Yoda, and he is leading troops, clone troopers, into battle. And we see a quick montage of battles all around the galaxy with all these stoic
Jedi. This is the first time of watching any Clone Wars-related animated content that the opening, I'm like, ooh, what is this cool
Yeah, exactly. I saw that shot, and my entire body went like, oh, because it was like getting something good for once. I was like, oh, a stylish anime style shot that just like sets everything up lovely. I was honestly like immediately interested. Whereas usually when I put an episode of Clone Wars on, my eyes are slowly being dragged towards my phone as I press play.
And every time that opening starts where it's like, in the galaxy, I'm like, did I miss an episode? What is going on?
You, well, you know,
the thing that's kind of interesting is that I feel like this series actually captures the war reel tone that Lucas and Filoni are going for in the other animated series. It just feels more like, it feels like, you're watching that. You remember that propaganda video in The Rocketeer, where you see like the Nazis getting like rocket packs and taking over the world. It feels like one of those like World War II propaganda animations, in the way that it's, and I just think it's interesting how this series manages to do it without the more like campy narration, but yeah, it still kind of achieves that.
But thing. I think that like that's like one of the problems with Lucas in general is that he's so on the nose, right? Like, I think what was interesting about watching this was Genndy Tartakovsky, like his animation is so clearly like inspired by those like classic, you know, shows from like the 60s and stuff like that. There's such a, there's so much references to those, and there's a lot of anime references, I think, in this series specifically, but it's not generally done in this way where it's just like, here's that thing, look directly at the thing that you already know, it's it, you know, like I can't help but watch this and think that, like, you know, because the Clone Wars TV show is so obviously supposed to be based on those Super Mario Nation puppets, you know, but it feels like so on the nose, whereas by comparison, this like sort of retro animation style that Tarkovsky like brings is just still something new, whereas Clone Wars doesn't feel like anything new.
Well, after seeing this montage of battle, we cut to Coruscant, where we learn that the IG Banking Clan, and IG stands for Intergalactic,
Federation. We're back, baby!
I mean, the Banking Clan is not the Trade Federation, but they're one of the main supporters of the Trade Federation and one of the members of the Separatist Alliance. And they have hidden factories on the planet Munalist. And the Jedis are deciding which of them are they going to send to this planet.
Jar Jar! Get Jar Jar!
Yeah, no Jar Jar in this. Very pleasant.
Yeah. But Obi-Wan volunteers, but Palpatine immediately is like, no, we want Anakin. Because he's grooming Anakin and giving him the confidence boosting, just so that because he knows the Jedi are just going to tear him down. And that's only going to, like, build the resentment in his heart. You know, Yoda doesn't really agree, but Palpatine kind of cuts him off and says, oh, I think we've all agreed that Anakin's going to join them on this mission. And so we get this great shot of all the soldiers gearing up and everybody ready to leave Coruscant to go on this mission. And Anakin steps up in front of his ship and removes his cloak as if he's, like, about to, like, remove all his clothes.
Everybody does that in the show. They spread their arms and their cloak just flies off.
Yeah, and hits 3PO in the face.
Yeah, good gag.
Yeah, good gag, good use of Across the Stars, I think, is the genre.
More emotion in the shot of this newly animated Anakin we've never seen before looking at Princess Amidala than anything in the last 22 episodes of The Clone Wars.
Yeah, I have to mention as well that I really enjoy Anakin's voice in this.
Oh my
where he
God.
Sounds kind of like Jason Schwartzman in Fantastic Mr. Fox, basically extremely petulant and childish.
I'm grumpy. I spit. I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I'm just different, apparently.
But I emerge victorious.
Yeah, the voice actor is not Matt Lanter, who's the sort of permanent animation voice actor now, but a guy named Matt Lucas.
Come on, no guys! Relations. I'm gonna go save you!
But I like it because, like, what I noticed in this film or series of episodes was that relationship that I'd almost come to expect between Anakin and Obi-Wan, where, you know, Anakin is, like, basically barely simmering rage being held back and Obi-Wan being kind of, like, snide about it, is, like, very apparent and very real in this series of episodes, which is never seen. He's just, like, a good, fun-loving guy in the Clone Wars series, which just doesn't work for me.
I think maybe the issue is that they really tried, because, you know, I think a lot of fans at least felt that Hayden in the prequel movies was so kind of, like, unlikable as a character, that they really tried to go in the other direction to make him kind of roguish and charming. But it only makes Obi-Wan seem like more of a buzzkill in comparison. Where here, he really does come across as petulant and immature, and therefore you kind of do find Obi-Wan.
And smug. And we have to remember that, like, even in the Clone Wars series we're watching, he's already killed a bunch of kids, right? Like,
yeah. So this definitely has a better child murderer vibe. Oh, no, wait, no, wait, hang on, he hasn't killed any kids yet.
No,
he's killed...
Oh, wait, you're right, he killed Tusken Raiders.
Tusken Raider children. Tusken Raiders are people too, Pierre.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I
also noticed here right at the beginning that I was slapped in the face with the fact that these were originally, I think they went directly to the internet, right, Peter?
Some of them, went directly to the internet.
And they were 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
And you really feel the transition
oh, boy,
at the end of that first episode. Because you actually hear Like, they barely mixed it. They didn't even rescore it. You begin to hear the da-da-da-da-da-da
as it cuts.
It cuts to the next episode. Some of the other transitions, though, fare a lot better. Anyway, as we transition, we see Obi-Wan prepping the ARC troopers. This was the first time, too, that audiences and fans of the time are getting to see this variation of the clone troopers.
Who are these? Have we seen them on the Clone Wars series, like the guys in blue and red?
Rex and Cody. The colors just designate what battalion they belong to.
Mm.
But Rex and Cody, I believe, are ARC troopers because they have the extra shoulder pad. So they're like kind of like head soldiers, and they invade the planet, and there's thousands and thousands of ships, and we watch one clone transport fly into the city and get shot down. It's almost like a Black Hawk Down scenario.
Oh, so good. They don't even talk. They're just doing their thing.
Yeah. None of the clones talk. I've noticed, though, that none of them are even going for a Maori accent like it is. And I will say, I think it's really effective in this series. I think that was another reason why there was an interest in telling a bigger animated series and one that was very much focused on the clones. And as we watch the series, we will begin to see how that show really does become a show about the clones, and that there's a lot of heart to them that we don't feel here. But we do get a wicked action sequence where they're being pinned down by sniper fire, and then they RPG back at them and take out a tank and infiltrate the city, and before the 3 minutes are up of this episode, they've taken and destroyed the enemy batteries and pretty much rolled out the red carpet so that Obi-Wan and his forces can move in.
And then we jump to my favorite Fido Dido, aka Master Fisto, right? In the water? Fighting up?
We're now in the water planet, yeah. Mon Calamari, we're it's a planet we learn is divided between two races, the Corrin.
Come on,
which
Mount Calamari? Is that the best that you can do?
I think Mon Cal is the name of the planet.
Yeah,
the Mon Calamari are the race that look like fish, and the Corrin
are the
ones that look like Cthulhu.
So what I was very disappointed, obviously, was that there is no Jamaican accent coming out of Kit Fisto. He's silent as well as anybody else.
But he's ripped, man.
I really noticed that Kit Fisto has kind of an Aquaman thing going on, which is like anytime he's not in war, he sucks and is lame and sucks. But as soon as you get him in war, he's awesome and he's doing lots of cool stuff with underwater troopers.
Yeah.
It's and the Mon Cal are riding like, you know, eels. He's doing cool stuff with the force.
I think that the one thing that happens in this series that the Clone Wars we've watched up to now doesn't do is, like, this is filled with new stuff I've never seen before. Like, eels, cool vehicles, those lances you see later when they ride, like, motorbikes.
Yeah, I mean, some of these ships and designs actually do get worked into later seasons of the Clone Wars. But
how did we come up with this? I don't know. I guess it just came to me. It can't be from this. It doesn't exist anymore.
No, they never throw anything out, Justin.
Oh, no.
But I like the water combat in this. He uses the force to create oxygen bubbles that he then
so
whips
cool.
at this big space cannon or the underwater cannon that the Corrin have built. And his lightsaber, like you can see it kind of boiling the water, which I think is really neat. And kind of like a thing that I feel like no one ever really kind of questioned, well, what would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And it looks pretty cool. But that's about it. Like, you basically just watch 3 minutes of him kicking ass.
Yeah,
in the water.
Think these are meant to be like interstitials between the 3 minutes that form one story. Because you also get one with Mace Windu later on.
Yeah. So, I mean, in many ways, the subsequent Clone Wars series is inspired by the structure of this series, which will be sort of...
Listen, we need a whole episode with Kit Fisto when we later see him get shot in the back in Revenge of the Sith.
We need it's true. I mean, Lucas introduced a bunch of Jedi at the end of Attack of the Clones, and so this is also an opportunity to kind of introduce these Jedi again to the
come
fans.
Come on, guys. I expected them to just stand there and just wave their arms around. What is all this action they're doing?
Well, meanwhile, back on the banking planet, the Republic batteries have successfully taken out the enemy's artillery points, and all the banking clan folks are really worried. And one of them starts to complain, well, you know, didn't Count Dooku send us this badass bounty hunter named Dirge? What's
this
he doing?
This badass biker bounty hunter?
And Dirge is this cool metal knight dude who has a detachment of IG droids on swoop bikes. and they all have javelins, and they basically ride out and just make short work of all the clones. What do you guys think of this guy?
Love him. He has two, like, revolvers that he uses on the side.
What I liked about Dirge was he looked kind of like a character drawn for the Transformers comic that was made in by Marvel in the UK, and that he looks completely insane and unlike anything else probably in Star Wars, but he also like completely
he used
owns.
To be called Deathhead 2000.
Yeah, he is. He's like Deathhead or something like that, right? He just looks completely out of time. Like, he's like a big, looks up like a real like 70s like heavy metal album cover.
I mean,
and
he
just
looks
shows
like
up and
every,
starts kicking ass.
Genndy Tartakovsky character, like he escaped from Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
I just love, too, that, like, inexplicably his javelin will just stab into something and then it explodes.
I love it. You know, something that anime does, and I've never seen anybody talk about this, that no other movie format does as well, is that there'll be, like, explosions that are slower than the other action happening on screen, which creates, like, an amazing effect. And Tartakovsky loves to do that, where, like, someone gets stabbed and then, boom, there's an explosion. Then the character will be moving normally as explosion.
I mean, honestly, the closest Star Wars has ever really come to outside of this series would be, I would say, The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, that the Holdo maneuver is such an anime moment.
Mm-hmm. That's that one in a million!
It's something out of Macross.
Yeah.
All right, now, while all this cool stuff is happening with Dirge, Dooku has visited the planet Ratatak to watch an alien gladiator match. Presumably, we assume to look for, I guess, candidates to help him in the separatist cause.
Man, this whole show, every new scene, the smile on my face just got wider. I'm like, what? there's a alien like gladiator combat that's happening now?
Yeah, and there's just like dozens of aliens just beating the crap out of each other. And Dooku's like, yeah, these are okay.
Wait, can I say that Count Dooku has more personality in one shot where he has like a leg crossed and he's watching them all than anything in the previous Clone Wars show?
Just wait until you see Dooku in his jammies in a future Clone Wars episode.
Oh, God.
It's a pretty good episode.
My man, I'm going to revise on my DeviantArt of Dooku because I assumed he slept in the nude.
Oh, yeah, and when he wants a glass of water and he reaches out with the Force, he's like, ooh, come on! And it just, like, moves an inch.
This is our introduction to Asajj Ventress, the assassin and soon-to-be apprentice of the Sith.
I wonder if they ever considered to have her in the Clone Wars CG show, to have no pupils like in this.
I wonder. Maybe they thought it would look too weird.
Yeah, because she has pure white eyes in the show.
It would have looked a lot cooler because she's way cooler in this show than she is in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, so she beats up all these aliens in short time and then turns to Dooku and says, "The dark side is strong with me, for I am Sith." And Dooku's like, "You're not Sith because I sense fear in you." And he lightnings her and takes her to a secret base to test her abilities as Darth Sidious watches.
Now, this is out of canon, right? Because Darth Sidious doesn't know that...
Sidious doesn't... Sidious knows that Dooku is using Ventress as an assassin and as an instrument. Doesn't necessarily know that Dooku intends to train her as an apprentice. But it's kind of something, again, like you said, like, you could fudge this easy by... Because Sidious explains that the only reason he's permitting this to happen is because he just wants to send someone to attack Anakin to bring the fear and anger and rage out of him. Like, it's entirely... Like, he knows that, like, Ventress probably won't survive the fight, or there's a chance that he won't survive the fight. He's actually counting on Ventress not surviving the fight. So he's not concerned with Dooku training her. Where in the Clone Wars, as we'll see in subsequent episodes, it's something that Dooku is doing a little bit more discreetly because he intends to, for a time being, have Ventress...
Something that I realized watching the show that I had never thought about in the Clone Wars, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in this show, you get an alien speaking in a foreign language, and it's subtitled, and it's like, rah, 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 which we never get in CG Clone
Wars,
right?
That was something that kind of went away after Return of the Jedi. I mean, like, in Return of the Jedi, you know, Jabba's subtitled.
Oh, love it.
It's great, but yeah, we don't get it that often. We never got it in the prequels, almost. Like, the prequels, you get it with Sebulba and Anakin. They have, like, a little alien conversation.
It just makes it feel, like, less of a hole in a bad way.
It's also a very great excuse to avoid racialized characters.
Yes, I agree.
You don't have to do faux accent.
Well, I mean, Sebulba.
I do actually think we do get some subtitles in Clone Wars, but again, it's limited to the characters that were established, like Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
Right. I noticed as well, watching this fight between Dooku and Ventress, they were fighting, right? And I was like, it's amazing. I'm enjoying this. But I think I said a few episodes ago, I was so bored of watching people have lightsaber fights because it just is not interesting to me. And this one, I was like rapt. I was like, oh yeah, it's not lightsaber fights I'm bored of. It's boring, badly shot lightsaber fights.
I mean, and I think a lot of the issues with, especially the first season of Clone Wars, is that by putting it in 3D, they're sort of just limiting themselves stylistically in terms of how dynamic they can make things. And I will say, eventually, the show gets to a point where we actually get lightsaber fights.
I have an argument about that, because Reboot is very dynamic, the TV show. So Clone Wars not being dynamic because it's in 3D is not a good excuse.
Well, I mean, because it actually gets to a place where we do see lightsaber fights that are this dynamic. It's just, I feel like they hadn't pushed the resources to that point, or they hadn't got good at doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That way.
They're like, we're just bad at doing this kind of stuff.
I mean, you know, because I mean, when you watch the season 7 episode where you know you're going to see a
hold
out
till season 7, Matthew and Justin.
I mean, I think it improves before then, but we do get to see fights where Ventress does have that dynamism, where there's definitely you see the kind of martial arts Shaw Brothers combat, and it's not just a Jedi standing in one place.
Why did it take so long? Like, this exists as a temp. You don't have to do exactly like this, but you can steal some ideas from it.
And it's kind of interesting as well because, like, you know, the animation style that Tarkovsky does is like, you know, he cut his teeth on Cartoon Network shows where the budgets were very low and you didn't get, you know, almost like the same as the old Hanna-Barbera cartoons where he just had to, like, use stills and, like, do as much as you could with his...
There's a lot of shortcuts in this show, too.
Yeah, and even in this, there's lots of shortcuts. There's not a lot of dynamic... Like, the characters stay very much on model for the most part. There's not a lot of, like, you know, smearing and all this other stuff. Like, it's pretty straightforward and, like, what's the word? Quite reserved, almost in a lot of ways, but it's still so alive in ways that the CG show just hasn't managed to be at all. And I think it's quite surprising, really. Like to think, like, I mean, I understand Justin's like constantly asking why, because you watch this and you go, "Oh, this is right here. Just do that, but more." You know, like it doesn't make any sense.
Like even the idea of them like blocking lights, like blast bolts, is cool in this. While in the CG show, they're just like, ugh, like puppets on strings.
Yeah, they're too slavish to the Fireball XL5 aesthetic. Back on, I can't even remember the name of that banking planet, but back on the banking planet, Obi-Wan is helping the clones fight these black IG knights and Dirge. And we get a really great action sequence where Obi-Wan and Dirge are going at each other, and Obi-Wan stabs Dirge, and you think, ah, that's it, that's the end of the fight. But Dirge starts laughing and starts just beating the crap out of Obi-Wan
with the lightsaber coming out of his chest too. He doesn't even take it out.
Yeah, it just like left inside of him, and just pulls out his revolver, shoots a bunch of times, has these little like wrist shields to block, fires like machine gun fire at one point, or like a nail gun, and Obi-Wan just uses the force to just like splash them away. Finally, Obi-Wan manages to slice him up, and at that point, he gets called by the clone troopers because they're about to invade the banking planet's HQ, and he goes off. But Dirge is not dead, though he's in pieces on the ground. We notice that he's got like a sort of, he's not a robot, because initially you kind of get the impression that maybe he's a robot or a droid, but he's actually some sort of organic thing, and you see all these tendrils and pink flesh inside, and they're becoming alive, and like the T-1000 sliding back together. And he shows up and attacks Obi-Wan again and all the clone troopers when they get to the
And he's like an Akira monster now. He's got like tentacles and stuff, and he's like knocking them out of the way.
Yeah, I mean there's a definite reference to Akira already, because when Obi-Wan's on a bike, it skids into the screen exactly like Akira. You know, it's like poetry. It rhymes.
It rhymes. And, like, Dirge has a very gross end where he explodes.
Yeah, Obi-Wan gets inside of him or something, mm-hmm. And then blows him up from the inside. And there's a bit of a comedy beat where Obi-Wan says, "I believe I've made quite the mess," and a very non-New Zealand stormtrooper says, "Yes, sir." I mean, the comedy they use with the the clone troopers in this is very understated. The joke is typically always how emotionless they are.
Yeah, they follow orders. That's the joke.
Yeah. They're just very, very literal and emotionally flat. And I think maybe that was the intention. If you watch the prequels, I mean, that's how they behave in the prequels. And it wasn't until the subsequent Clone Wars series where they were actually treated as sentient individuals that actually began to develop personality over time. And it may be the case that the early clones that came off the assembly line were more emotionally distant. And over time, the clones got a little bit more personable. As they grew.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and not to read too much into it, I mean, I do imagine that when they all came off the assembly line, they were just like, yes, sir, no, sir. But over time of getting more experiences, they became more character-filled, and then the new ones off the line were still intended to be like, yes, sir, no, sir. But as soon as you hang about with a bunch of weirdos who've been through a few tours of duty who are somehow still alive, you lose that pretty quickly.
Yeah, we should get new haircuts.
Up in space, Anakin's blowing up a ton of ships, doing a lot of cool maneuvers. There's a really great sequence where he orders the clones to fire missiles seemingly into empty space, only because he's being followed by literally 1,000 droid ships, and he flies them right into the missiles and then has the remaining missiles fly into a giant droid gun turret and blows it all up. I noticed at this point, too, that he's not flying with R2. He's flying with a red.
I wonder why he could be flying with a robot called R4. Could it be because he will be killed later on?
Yeah. Which I thought was interesting because I forgot about that. I kind of
he's like, oh yeah, remember. R2 sucks. I got a better one, R4.
And it actually made me think that this series might actually be the series. I think in the second season, it sort of has him make R2 his new go-to droid. So that is something that is like, you know, a gap filled that is kind of necessary because the R2 belongs to Amidala in Attack of the Clones.
Does how does R2 get involved? I don't know if I remember. It doesn't matter.
R2, it's ridiculous. In The Phantom Menace, R2 is just a random droid on the
right, and he fixes the ship when they get all blown out. Yeah, now I remember.
And then they're like, and then they're like, this is the droid that fixed the ship. Which I think Red Letter Media was like, why, who cares? This society doesn't care about droids. They wouldn't stop to notice.
So I think after that, like Anakin chases, sees a ship that Ventress is flying.
Yeah, a ship comes out of nowhere. After it seems like a success in space, but then suddenly clones are getting shot down left, right, and center by a mysterious new ship. Cool design. It's like a ball with a big fan.
Is this another design that's existed? This looks like something out of like Asimov's Foundation or something like
that.
I
actually think it was a ship design that was made for Attack of the Clones that wasn't used in Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
I think it might have been a version of Dooku's ship, and then they went with the smaller, more angular
version. Let's get
version.
Something lamer instead.
I mean, I was also... The ball pod makes me think of... the opening of Lost in Space, where Matt LeBlanc is in those weird like ball pod shows.
I do not remember anything of Lost in Space.
I'm amazed at your ability to remember anything from the Matt LeBlanc version of Lost in Space. Congratulations, Peter. You have useless information in your brain.
Let's start a Lost in Space pod.
Yeah, minute by minute through Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah, we just do 1 minute of Lost in Space every week, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And we just covered. We've just covered the first minute. We've just covered the first minute with the ball pod tip. Hang Anakin ends up chasing the ship onto the planet. Obi-Wan observes Anakin, you know, flying around, and there's some bickering between Anakin and Obi-Wan, but as Matthew mentioned, it actually feels warranted based on how Anakin is characterized. He's like a smug whiny and arrogant kid, and he's a kid that, you know, in the context of what we saw, you know, him in immediately before, is a child murderer. So this is all tracking pretty good. Obi-Wan does say the immortal line, "I've got a bad feeling."
You know what? In this show, I'm like, yeah, this rocks.
Yeah, I let it pass, you know, like, because the emotional context was there, you know, mm-hmm. like in every other episode, it's just
it wasn't
said.
Fucking like Billy Dee Williams being like, got a bad feeling about this in like the third episode of Mandalorian season 3.
You can see the future, Justin.
I know. I you know what? Someone's going to say it. You know they will.
Well, so Anakin has chased Ventress off, gone into hyperspace. Who knows what will befall him. Obi-Wan dispatches a squad to follow after him. We would continue with his adventure, but instead we're cutting to Dantooine, and we're going to watch the incredible heroics of Mr. Mace.
This party's over.
So do you think Samuel Jackson saw this episode and was like, what the fuck?
Like, this felt like anime references as well, but I thought maybe from like Gundam or something, where the little kid runs over the hill and he's watching the battle happen. I wasn't sure if that was in the first Gundam movie or if I just imagined that.
There's hills and little kids in Gundam, but I don't remember this particular. It's kind of like a trope, I feel.
Yeah,
like a little kid watching like a battle going on.
And this kid is a little bucket hat. And
yeah, he grew up to be that radical kid on the planet that we saw a few episodes.
It's Jado. It's little Jado or Jabo.
Yeah. this is such a simple idea, though. It's like Mace Windu's tearing into all these battle droids, and then a ship shows up, and all it does is like a big kind of press that slams into the ground.
It ground pounds them.
Yeah.
The ship looks like it was inspired by the World Destroyer from Star Wars Dark Empire, which is a famous comic arc that took place in the early 90s. And the design of the World Destroyer has shown up in subsequent Star Wars media. It ends up in Star Wars Rebels at some point. But yeah, it's kind of like this big hovercraft that just sort of floats above the ground. And yeah, just ground pounds both clone troops and battle droid troops. It's like a pretty disturbing and apocalyptic image.
Yeah.
As it smashes into the ground and creates these incredible dirt shockwaves that send everyone flying. Mace is undeterred by this, though, and he just starts running towards this big ship, taking out battle droids, literally ripping the gears from out of them with the
force. As Peter hinted earlier on, Mace Windu at one point loses his lightsaber, and one of the droids kind of points his gun at him, and he just, all the screws come out of the droid, so the droid falls apart, and then he uses the screws to impale a bunch of other droids.
And then another gag I really liked was just his Ip Man punches. Like he just like just drilling these super battle droids with punches. And the thing that you really get from the sequence is, and maybe it was something that George had a problem with despite the fact that they're super cool, is that like the Jedis here are full on superheroes. Like they are absolutely superheroes in a way that they really aren't ever presented in both the prequel trilogy or the Clone Wars series, where they're instead presented as failed politicians, basically.
But I would argue that Mace Windu doesn't save anybody in this sequence. Like, he doesn't care about his men or any of that stuff.
That's true. And that's, I think that has always been Mace Windu's personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been pretty consistent.
What do you have to say about the sequence, Matthew?
It's cool. I mean, like, the problem with a lot of this, you know, this episode is that for most of it, I was like, this is extremely cool and I'm enjoying it. Do I have much more to say? Not really, no. I mean, like, the fact is, I am not a Mace Windu booster. I think he's lame. I think he sucks. I think he's boring. And here he still managed to be cool. So, you know, like, what else can I say?
Let's just, on the record, though, we all agreed that last episode of The Clone Wars, Mace Windu did some cool things.
Like No, that wasn't last episode. That was a couple episodes ago, wasn't it?
No, that was the last Ryloth episode.
Oh my god, time stretches onward.
I mean, there was just the rest of the episode that followed.
I like
but there
Mace
was that
Windu.
One cool moment.
It's crazy that George Lucas would cast Samuel Jackson and have him do nothing.
He gave him a purple lightsaber. I also like that Mace Windu has an expression that a lot of the Jedi have in this series, which is, I feel like, the shifty eye dog from The Simpsons. constantly narrowing
looking
their
the
eyes, looking left to right. But yeah, he ends up, infiltrating the giant ship, stabbing his lightsaber through its wall into the head of a of a battle droid. I like how the other battle droid looks at that happening and then casually kind of reaches up to the alarm button.
I like how the battle droids are like redder in this TV show. They look better.
Yeah. There's less droid comedy, and you really do get a sense of why the battle droids would be a threat, because there's simply so many of them.
Yep.
And they're unending. So that's also very welcome.
And now we jump to the Jedi Crystal Cave.
Yeah, we're on the planet of Ilum, which is a very important planet in Star Wars lore. This is where the Jedi, one of the most important Jedi temples are, and it's where Jedi's harvest Kyber Crystal, so they can make lightsabers. Apparently, this is the planet that eventually becomes Starkiller Base. The explanation for why there's a planet that can have like this crazy Death Star canon is that like the core of this planet is pretty much a big lightsaber crystal.
So what we get here is two Jedis get trapped by a bunch of robots who are setting bombs.
Yeah, and you recognize these Jedis?
The older one, or the older one is the one who's in another episode of Clone Wars,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's the one that teaches Ahsoka a lesson, right?
Yeah, she's in the Handsome McBetrayal episode,
yeah,
the Paul
right.
Dini episode. She's a Jedi Master Luminara, and she is teaching Barriss Offrey, her Padawan, who becomes a very important character in Clone Wars. We'll soon learn that she becomes one of Ahsoka's sort of best friends, and I think she has a pretty fantastic arc over the course of the series. And we see her learn how to build a lightsaber, and we learn that it, you know,
yep, she spent her $170 at a Galaxy's Edge and she got the lightsaber building experience.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of cloaked battle droids that had invaded the planet of Ilum and are start making quick work of destroying the temple and trying to kill them both, almost succeeding, and they are nearly crushed by debris. Of which Barriss is trying to hold off with the Force, but then notices that Luminara is merely being calm about it, and so they both assume a meditative state, and they reach out with the Force and contact Yoda, who senses danger from across the galaxy.
Okay, so now I have a big problem. I know why this can't be included in canon. Yoda's not allowed to help people in any Star Wars property, because he sucks. I hate him, except when he's a puppet. That's the only time I like Yoda.
Well, Yoda, kind of is does something kind of odd here. Yoda uses Jedi mind tricks on Captain Tycho, which I suppose is allowed. Like, Jedis are used to doing that, but it feels very manipulative and like for a character that's supposed to be a good guy. It's not like they're manipulating the brain of a stormtrooper. Like, this is Padme Amidala's right hand man and security officer, and Yoda just basically convinces him that no, we have to go help these Jedi because we're near
them. Well, I mean, like, in the Empire Strikes Back, like, Yoda's whole thing is he's a funny wee guy getting up to mischief, right? It's only the other, like, the prequels really that set Yoda up as this, like, wise, like, annoying guy who just sits about and can't fucking see a Sith in front of his fucking nose. You know?
That's the thing, right? Is that, like, in The Last Jedi, Yoda rocks in that. He's the best.
Yeah, he's a mischievous, funny wee guy, which is what you want from Yoda. Like, I remember going to see Attack of the Clones, and then Yoda's doing all the flipping about and using lightsabers and stuff. And it's one of those things you're like, yeah, I guess this is cool.
Yeah, this
but
sucks.
It's not really what you... It's even though you think people might think that's what people want, it's not what people should have. He should be a funny wee guy getting up to mischief. So if anything, this makes perfect sense. He'd be like, listen, this guy's a fucking idiot, so I'm just going to use my powers on him, and me and the princess are going to have a wee laugh about it, which is what basically happens. She's like, ah, he is a Muppet. I mean, no offense, Yoda, you obviously being an actual Muppet, but... You know, so I liked it. You know, I'll give him points. That's more on model than him leaping about with a lightsaber, you know, which he does go on to do, which is still pretty cool. I'll give him that.
Well, regardless, Yoda succeeds in getting them to redirect their flight. They arrive on the planet, and we get a little episode where Yoda makes short work of the cloaked battle droids.
Yeah, this is probably the episode I liked the least, but I did like when Padme went out to help Yoda and she basically sent C-3PO to be blown up. That
was I really enjoyed that. I was like, God, Padme doesn't even give a shit about C-3PO. She's like, yeah, go out there and get killed, because that
yeah,
might
so
help.
Yeah, so basically, like, she's pinned down by droids, and, like, her coat, she uses it as, like, a decoy to see where the droids are. But then there's more of them. And then she's like, how will I know where they are? And then she's like, C-3PO, can you get my coat for me? And he's like, oh, yeah, whatever you want, Padme. And then
yeah.
he basically almost gets killed.
The thing that I feel like this is probably the weakest episode,
yeah.
too, because it also ends with this moment where Yoda's like, I'm disturbed that the Jedi Temple has been you know, compromised. How could this have happened? Who would have told them where the Jedi is? And then R2 plays a hologram of Count Dooku, and it's like, yeah, Count Dooku, the former Jedi, who knows everything about the Jedi because he was one of you. Like, why is this a surprise? And it's just a weird kind of twist.
Again, yeah. Prequels Yoda sucks. A moron.
True. It's in canon. That's consistent. All right, now we get to some really fun stuff. The volume builds to its climax with Anakin chasing Ventress to the planet of Yavin. Yavin 4, one of the moons of Yavin from A New Hope. And the clones are following behind him. And you can tell that Anakin is kind of annoyed about this. He's like, ugh, Obi-Wan doesn't trust me. But he gets the clones to set up a perimeter, and we get a really great sequence where the clones are walking around, and it's just a montage of clones getting the asses kicked.
Even though Anakin kind of looks like a dummy, because the clones are like, ah! And then Anakin's like, did I hear something?
Anakin's just like, something's not right. Can't yep. put my finger on it. But before long, pretty much all the clones are dead. Their ships are blown up, including, we know and love him, R4. R4 is
I love how Anakin is like, no! When R4
he really cares about droids. You know, Anakin has attachments. That's the whole thing with Anakin. He gets attached to stuff.
Loves droids, hates children. Got it.
Yeah,
there's a great shot of Ventress coming through the flames, literally using the Force to part the flames. They begin a really great lightsaber fight, which escalates to a thunderstorm, and we get, I think, the best image in the whole series, and one of the best Star Wars images, period,
Ooh.
Of rain hitting their lightsabers.
So, does that happen
them.
In Revenge of, whatever the last one was? I don't remember.
You mean in Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, because they fight in the rain. Do you see it, like, sizzling?
I don't know if we do. I know that Kylo's lightsaber is kind of sizzling all the time, and I think I have a vague memory, and this shows how little I watch both Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker. I kind of have a vague memory of his lightsaber sizzling with the snow.
It does sizzle in the snow, yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
That's like one of the... this latter half of that movie is not that great, but this fighting in the snow is pretty good, you know? Like,
yeah.
And yeah, they definitely, like, it sizzles in the snow. I, funnily enough, don't really remember what happens with the lightsabers in Rise of Skywalker, but that movie sucks, so moving on.
I mean, the thing is, that fight sequence, it's not so much raining as it is, like, just, like tidal waves are crashing
right,
against
right.
them,
ah,
and
this...
it's so misty that, like, it just, it wouldn't stand out, probably, as a, you know, where here, it's just so stark, and...
Well, they,
yeah, just,
you know,
a brilliant fight scene.
Yeah, you just kind of like, you know, you bathe in that sizzling lightsaber. That is the suspense mechanism in the sequence as they stare at each other and the rain's coming down. And you're like,
it's just pure, it's pure samurai stuff.
Yeah.
And I will say, I think Filoni eventually, you know, is able to nail moments like this in later Clone Wars episodes and in shows like Rebels. But yeah,
I mean, he nails it in Mandalorian, so there's
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So he does get there
eventually. Like,
eventually, decade later.
Yeah, I think this lightsaber fight goes on a little too long for my taste. It's just like, okay, we got it.
It is a little long, and it really just builds to a pretty predictable point where it's Anakin basically channels his rage in order to defeat
there
Ventress.
Is a cool thing that there's like flash frames of like Yoda like painted blue on black and like
yeah
Obi-Wan.
And Qui-Gon Jinn
yeah.
Qui-Gon Jinn as well
yeah
oh,
I mean I think that is the problem with this fight, is that it goes on too long to an inevitable end, and you get a, but the inevitable end, it really, it pops. You know, I really liked it. Like, I thought it totally worked. The sort of the rage scream, the primal scream he gives at the end, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It works, you know?
And Ventress falls off the cliff to her death. At the time, that's what people thought, but of course.
Yeah, nobody thought that. Not for a second.
So she's still around and kicking, and thank God, because she's a great character. We'll see more of her soon. I also think that fight is too long because it meant we couldn't get a long fight with my new favorite Jedi that I completely forgot about, the Wolfman
Jedi.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, Wolfman Jedi.
Wolfman Jedi.
I was, like, so excited. So, who is Wolfman Jedi? Tells all about Imperial, you know, all of his canon.
Your favorite Jedi.
Which comic books to read, you know, like,
actually,
when he shows up in Clone Wars.
There's another Jedi that comes up a little bit later that's my favorite, but I like Wolfman, too.
I'm actually going to look up who the Wolfman Jedi is right now, because...
So he's supposed to be based on that shitty mask, right, that was used in the cantina?
We've cracked it. This has got to be why he canceled it. It's like, not the Wolfman, the Wolfman that he removed from the film, because he thought it looked too much like a Wolfman.
Wow, this is his only appearance in this TV show.
Yeah.
Vulvith Mon.
Yeah. Good freaking Jedi. Good mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah, he owns. I wish we saw him more.
So, yeah, you know, we get to see him owning, and Anakin shows back up in Ventress's ship.
Wait, I have some behind-the-scenes info here. Vulvith Moon was created as part of a Cartoon Network poll to determine which three new Jedi, each based on characters seen in the cantina scene in Star Wars A New Hope, should be in Star Wars Clone Wars.
You know what? The fans, sometimes they get it right.
Wait. Who else could it be in that cantina scene? Could it be like the bartender? I want him to be a Jedi.
No, I want that little. First of all, I want to see a cantina band player play a Jedi.
Yeah.
Oh, and he has his clarinet is like a clarinet and a lightsaber.
Yeah, you know what? He works hard, but he plays hard too.
He fights hard, he jizzes hard.
Oh, it was right there and I missed it. God damn it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it, Peter, because this whole episode, I was thinking to myself, like, eventually we're going to mention jizz music and Peter's going to get angry and you're the one who brought it up!
I know, I just felt that it was right there for Justin and I had to shove his face in it.
Is there going
to
be like a Pee-wee style, like, woo!
Anakin is like, hey, I'm sorry for being disobedient, but hey, I was totally victorious, so I get praise for that, right? And Obi-Wan is like, nah, not really. I'm pretty disturbed that the Sith are constantly trying to draw you out. Something's going on. But they're interrupted by a comlink call from Jedi Master Barak, who we don't get to see ever because he gets defeated in this hologram, but he kind of looks like he has a real Hanna-Barbera look to him. Like, he just looks like a normal dude.
He looks exactly like the faded godmother from Cinderella.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Well,
he has like kind of a
Hanna-Barbera guys, though. There's a real shaggy Jedi that shows up a little bit later on.
Yes, there is.
And but anyway, he's our transition to our final sequence, which is pretty stellar and a sequence that has made Justin wonder for many a year, why?
Why?
Why is Grievous not this cool?
Yes, like, why would
we
design?
We catch up with a bunch of Jedi that are hiding out in a destroyed Republic cruiser, having been routed by the Separatists, who are being led by who we are told is named General Grievous.
And so there's a Jedi in this that looks exactly like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo,
yes.
And he's like, oh, man! And I heard one line, and I went, wait a minute, is that John DiMaggio? Yep, it is!
I feel like it has to be an intentional Shaggy reference.
Yeah, it has to be, yeah, because he's like, zoinks, I gotta get out of here!
Yeah, I enjoy that he runs outside and is immediately stomped to death by General Grievous. This last sequence is insanely brutal. Like, it's like he rips, like, he doesn't rip any Jedi in half or anything, but he like smashes Jedi's face into the ground, like obviously killing them in front of your very eyes.
So General Grievous, this is exactly what I would think he would do based on his design. He's got multiple arms. His whole gimmick is that he is not a Force user, but he loves to fight Jedis. So he has to be powerful enough to be able to take them on, which is what you see in the sequence.
Yeah, and I mean, even before we see him, he first gives an amazing Lord Humongous like speech. His voice is scary and weird.
You are surrounded. Your army is decimated. Make peace with the boss now. For this is your final hour. But know that I, General Grievous, am not completely without mercy.
Again, you have made me unleash my dogs of war.
Yeah, and they set up the sound design of him clinking slowly towards them, which is what, you know, causes Shaggy to panic.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great buildup. When it finally happens, yeah, he's like crushing people. He's grabbing people's faces with their foot and then just shoving them away, clearly breaking their necks in the process.
And his like, body, like, flips all these over, Jedi get killed. And like he can use his feet as his hands and using multiple like lightsabers and stuff like that.
And then, yeah, he ends up dispatching at the very end. He's fighting against Ki-Adi Mundi and Shakti, two Jedi that don't die in the sequence. So I'm actually not sure how they survive and make it out of here. It leaves it on a cliffhanger. But both those Jedi are alive and well in both the Clone Wars.
Maybe they're who give him that horrible cough. You know, they actually stabbed him or something.
That happens in the series.
No, actually, this is a minor spoiler alert, but the cough is explained in the second volume.
Yes, it is.
Because initially it was going to only be something that was occurring in Revenge of the Sith and not all the time.
And so I remember not this sequence that much, but there's another amazing episode in the second volume where they have to like protect Palpatine and Grievous is coming after them. And he's like an unbeatable like monster that like seven Jedis can't take out. Great episode.
Yeah, it's a sequence that takes place 15 minutes before the start of Revenge of the Sith, and it's how this series
which is insane. So I saw that and I was like, I can't wait to see Grievous in live action. And then I saw the movie and I'm like, what the fuck is this? I suck so much.
Time to make my escape.
Wait, is the guy who voices Grievous in this also voice him in Revenge of the Sith?
No, it's a different voice actor. And initially, the voice of General Grievous was going to be Gary Oldman. And then I think they couldn't get him for a union reason. The union couldn't permit it for some reason.
Well, you hadn't seen these before, right, Matthew? So you didn't understand my frustration every time General Grievous popped up.
No, they showed these on Cartoon Network at the time. And so I caught maybe like, I don't know, 10 of them or something. But, you know, there's obviously like, there's like 30 episodes, right? Including season 2. So I've only seen like, you know, couple of the Yoda ones, some of the earlier ones. So I'd seen about half of these beforehand, but I hadn't seen the General Grievous one. Otherwise, yes, I had no concept that General Grievous was ever portrayed as cool, which he very much is here. He's even scary, as Pierre points out. Like, he's actually like a threat, like, which he does not appear at any other point. He's more sort of comic relief, like, which is very strange.
Because, like, we talked about that episode where Kit Fisto is at General Grievous's lair, and I thought that he would act like he does here, where he's, like, sneaking around, he's, like, falling out of the shadows. Nope, none of that.
No, just scurrying away, going, oh, don't kill me, I lost my legs. Yeah, God. Bad stuff. Well, this was fun, though. I think I think we should watch Volume 2 the next time we feel we need a break.
At the end of season 2.
You're going to be the next episode. It's like, Peter, can we take that break now?
Oh, no. What's the next episode?
No, the next episode should be fun. Well, it's a double-edged sword. We're going to be getting Paul Dini writing again because his character, Cad Bane, the cowboy bounty hunter, the character that Justin's been waiting for. Unfortunately, in the very same episode, it's the return of the Truman Capote of the Star Wars universe, Zero the Hutt.
Oh, no. Man.
Pain and pleasure, Justin. Indivisible.
Wait, is Jar Jar there? I like Jar Jar.
I think he might be because it takes place at the Senate building.
So do you think that while they were making the CGI Clone Wars series, anything that got too close to the Tarkovsky one, they're like, pull it back. We don't want any of that.
No, I don't think so.
They're like,
I do think
we're just bad at our jobs.
No, I do think they probably initially I think both from a workflow standpoint, you know, were technically limited based on how they were modeling their show or how they were designing their assets, were a little less limited in terms of how the action could look. And I also do think there was an interest in grounding it more and making it match the prequel, the live action films, so that it wouldn't feel as discongruous.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, George just came in and said, look, anything a puppet couldn't do, our characters can't do, all right? You need to imagine there are strings above them at all times, and there's jerking about like amazing Super Mario Nation figures.
Because, like, again, when people say, like, well, you know, this kind of CG couldn't be that like, Reboot, a show that came out in 1994. You watched the pilot of
that
show?
Have you watched Reboot lately?
Yes, I have. I have the DVD set. Very dynamic. Looks like shit, but dynamically filmed.
We'll get
Clone
there,
Wars
promise,
started in 2008, man. 2008.
I swear. They developed the assets. Things get better. Things get faster. You've seen better, a bit of it in Rebels.
It's just a little dirty. It's still good.
Do we have any Star Wars news? It was George Lucas's birthday last week.
And the day we're recording is actually the day that Attack of the Clones came out.
So in honor of that, we're watching
where we were.
Oh wait, if we do Pain and Pleasure, should we watch the Attack of the Clones movie at the end of season 2?
No. Under no circumstances. I mean, everyone agrees that's the worst possible fucking shit, right? I mean, no one likes
it's the
that.
Worst one.
There's definitely probably apologists out there that are like, actually, I really like the diner and I like that it has a film noir plot.
Yeah, those people suck. That's all I got.
I mean, I will say, Attack of the Clones did give us Dexter, which is one of the great Star Wars characters. The one with the
I agree.
One with the mustache.
And the one with a big ass crack.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yep.
Do I need to come up with a pun?
Yes.
For this episode?
Yes, that's the rule. All
right. Is it a special episode and he doesn't have to, though?
No.
No, I have one that I was going to save for another episode, but I can use it. I think it's pretty good. And we had a good time, so I wanted to deliver a good pun. And I'm going to say, what is the Sith's favorite, what is the Sith's favorite 80s comedy?
I don't know.
Asajj Ventress in Babysitting.
Okay. That's a figure.
I mean, okay, you know, like, I mean,
my delivery could have been better.
Yeah, I mean, you got zazz it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm tired, guys.
We take four rounds of sun, then we go straight through.
Let's see what this baby can do.
Hang on to your joystick.